Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Welcome, everyone, to the Goddess Vibration Podcast. This is Allie.
And this is Tiara.
Today, I want to talk about the game of life. Not the literal game of life, if you're a child and you know that game. I actually loved that game growing up. But the game of life in terms of, I guess, because we already covered the Matrix, and so I really don't want to get into the Matrix. I mean, there'll be tidbits of the Matrix because it is part of our game of life. But kind of about the origin of the planet a little bit with the programming and how we are all stuck and how we are just pawns, like in a game of chess. Because life is a game, right? If Earth really is a simulation, because I feel like that's been the sentiment that's been coming out. So if we live in a simulation, that means this planet has a creator, like the creator of games. There was codes written, there was creation, and they decided to ask themselves, how do we want to run this planet? Now, some people might say it's the Watchers, some might say it's the Nephilim, some might say it's the Anunnaki. There's many players, right? And there's powerful players, and there's winners to this game, and there are perceived losers in this game. And I just kind of want to talk about it all, about the game of life, because this planet does have a creator. They created people. There are Watchers who have fallen, and there are dark forces on this planet, and there are light forces on this planet, and there are winners and there are losers. And I feel like they have decided, how do we want to run this planet? And they decided capitalism. And they were just like, okay, so if we're going to go the route of capitalism, then how do we get rich in the process? And how do we find these workers to come work for us and make us rich? So we were sold on a program. And I feel like when capitalism really started to pick up was during the boomer generation, because the boomers have generated more wealth than any other generation in the history of humanity. And during that time of the boomer period, you have to understand that we were in the industrial period, all right? So like the money really was in steel, it was in manufacturing, it was in automation, like automobiles. And what did they need? They needed workers to come and run all of their machines and build the roads and, you know, help build civilization. And these people have gotten rich on the backs of us small folk in the process. And now we have shifted into out of the industrial period, and now we are in the technology period. And they are now discovering, we don't need people. We don't need people for technology, because there is this thing called AI, and we can just automate everything, and we can turn everything into automation, and people are becoming less and less irrelevant. And so now they're just like, well, what do we do with all these people? Well, let's basically turn them into poor people and beggars, and pretty much they're abandoning us. after we have given our lives to them. And so I kind of want to talk about how you escape that and ways that you can win in life and just provide different perspectives on this crazy thing that we are calling the game of life.
This is an interesting concept because, first of all, before we start, I just want to say I got a tan over the last few days, and I think it looks fabulous, and my goal is to get a couple shades darker than this. I don't know if that's possible, but I just wanted to share that because I'm very proud of it. Anyway, the game of life is an interesting concept because I've always thought in my mind that, like, you know, when it comes to this specific game, that depending on your socioeconomic status, your race, your culture, the game of life is easier for some people than it is for other people. And I feel like it kind of weaves, right. And it interweaves into this concept that we have with capitalism, where it's like, you've got your winners and then you got your losers. And then the people who win, they're going to win at different levels. And then the people who lose are going to lose at different levels. And I just feel like it's never been a fair game across the board. Like, I know there are some people who swear up and down that everyone has the same opportunity. It's not. And everyone's like, everyone's got the same chance and opportunity. You just go and work hard. You just go get an education and everyone can do it. And I'm just like, it's not so simplistic because there are biases built into our society that affect you depending on what you look like. There are people that have specific traumas that affect them and what they can do and attain and achieve that they don't often have control over. There are children who grow up in specific environments that inherently give them disadvantages that make it difficult for them to overcome. And so it's never sat well with me, this idea that anyone can just pick up and succeed at the game of life, regardless of who you are and what you are. And I'm just like, no, that's not how it works. And I'm convinced too that our government has gone to great lengths to affect and incapacitate specific races and cultures on purpose. And I could speak to that all day, especially when it comes to the Black community. I could say a lot about that. I don't know if we want to go that route on this episode. It's never been a fair game. I don't know that it ever will be a fair game. And I think we are at a point in our society where we are seeing end-stage capitalism that has kind of gotten to this point where it's broken down so many people and it's become so disjointed and distorted from what it intentionally was that there is no coming back, honestly. It's like, you got your winners. Most people are going to be losers. Outside of that, as Ali mentions, there are ways that you can escape, but it's going to be so immensely difficult.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
And it's going to require like a complete overhaul of your belief systems. So this should be an interesting conversation.
I love how Tiara mentioned that it's not a fair game because it's not. And the point blank, some people are born into privilege, most are not. You know? And if you're born into privilege, guess what? You're already like 10 steps ahead of in the game of life. And, you know, they have lied to us. They have lied to us and said, everyone's an equal. Everyone starts off the same. And no, that's not true. And basically, this is how dark a lot of this stuff gets because I have gone down the rabbit hole of what schools are. Schools are basically a grooming system for the workplace. It's like You have to follow rules in school. You have to line up in school. You have to follow the leader in school. Like, these are all things that have been programmed into us the second we walk into kindergarten or preschool. There's rules. You have to line up. There's usually a leader for the day. And you have to follow all of these ridiculous just rules. And it's like, okay, so if you act out of class, if you speak out of turn, then you're in trouble. And you have to understand like what types of this programming does to us. And they say, well, if you follow our school route, then you can get a job and then you can work up in the workplace, like you can climb up the ladder in terms of becoming management. So normally it's like you have an entry level job and then you usually work up to some type of sales job. And then it's like, okay, we're going to look at you for management. And then, you know, you're going to be rewarded for your hard work. But the problem is that if you actually look at these companies that we work for, and if you look at these CEOs, a lot of them hold all the power, they have all the money, and we are so like dismally paid that none of us can actually keep up. And it's soul-sucking. It's absolutely a gut-wrenching game, because by the time that we retire, we don't have, like, especially with inflation, if we want to look at the economy and the inflation, by the time that we retire, none of us are actually going to be able to retire. It's like the most heartbreaking TikToks I see nowadays are the ones where you see people like in their 80s working at a Walmart as a greeter or in Home Depot or being some type of food stalker, like back, you know, in the grocery stores. And it's just so heartbreaking because it's like these people followed the system. They gave their lives. They gave up their youth. They gave up their bodies. And, you know, it's like, and now it's like even the retired, now we're going to punish them and force them back into the workforce because life is just way too expensive nowadays. It's like, what was it all for? Why are we doing this to ourselves? And that's what kind of people are waking up to. I know that's what people are waking up to, because these are the types of things that we need awareness, because you have to understand that the game of life is literally set up for us to fail. And the reason why it's set up to fail is because you guys have to understand, if we all had money, if all of us had money where work was optional and if we could just choose to work, guess what? How many of us, if we had the option to work, would actually choose work? Think about that for just a second, okay? And this is why it's set up to fail, because if we all had enough money to live, they would have absolutely no one to run their companies. They would have no one to just make their wealth bigger. They would have no one. It's like that this is the stages of capitalism. They need us. They need the average American workforce or average workforce. We're Americans, sorry. If you're listening outside of this country, they need us, because how are we going to fund their extravagant lives? How are they going to be able to take these luxurious vacations? And how are they going to buy their yachts? And how are they going to, you know, but live in their mansions and do just have helicopters and 10 private jets, because who needs 10? And it's just like, you have to understand, it's like they need us, because without us, the game of capitalism would fall apart. And I just don't think enough people understand that. It's like, it's completely rigged. And we are just a pawn in this bigger game of life.
You know, it's interesting you mention how they wouldn't be able to sustain themselves as companies if they couldn't hire individuals at slave wages. It's like, it's almost like slave wages and exploitation of workers is built into capitalism inherently.
It is. Oh, 1,000%.
When you think about that, that is so freaking dark. And I don't think that we really consider that or fathom that, because I've never fathomed that. And I think what most people do is they go out thinking that they're going to win, right? Like, I've got my education, I've got my degree, I've been working hard my entire life. I'm going to climb the corporate ladder and I'm going to get a piece of this pie too. And I'm going to be very successful and wealthy. Like, all of us kind of go into it. And even when it comes to going into college and choosing your career path, assuming that you're going to succeed, right? Like, we don't go in assuming, hey, I'm going to be one of those slave wage workers, right? You just kind of end up there because of how everything's rigged against you, like through no fault of your own, really. And I've been reflecting on hard work and how they've told us hard work amounts to great success. And then I look at these people who are working 2-3 jobs and they're working 80 hours a week and they still can't pay their rent. They still can't afford their rent. And I'm just like, it's not about hard work. There's something else that is inherently wrong with capitalism and what we're telling people about what it means to succeed and how to succeed. And when you've done everything right, as we've described, you know, before on this podcast, we've talked about how we've been taught to follow a specific college to career pipeline. When you do everything right and you still find yourself at the bottom struggling, it's very demoralizing and it's very jarring. And you sort of lose faith in yourself, for one, but also in the system that you believed in for so, so long. So yeah, you know, we're definitely, in my opinion, at end stage capitalism, and to the point where I have seen sentiments around how it might be necessary for companies to start paying for people to live in homes. Like, I've heard of, like, I don't know if you guys have heard about corporate towns, where there are companies that will actually pay for staff to live in the town and live in the area, because their, like, wages Tesla. Aren't high enough.
Tesla has one.
Because their wages aren't high enough otherwise. And I'm just like, that is some of the most dystopian stuff I have ever heard. So yeah, it's when you step back and look at it, it's so incredibly dismal and dark. And I'm just like, how did we get here? I can think of some things, but yeah, how we got here, it's insane. It blows my mind. And I honestly don't know how we get out of here.
Well, I think you have to look at history. And, you know, I've been digging into the Federal Reserve, and I think the Federal Reserve is super fascinating. And the Federal Reserve is actually tied to the Titanic, because the Titanic, in my humble opinion, was a complete hit job. And I have seen the theories about how, you know, they used an old damaged boat and they just kind of patched up the damage. And the Titanic was completely planned. And if you actually look at, like, I think it was like the 7 most wealthiest people at the time died on that boat. And they were actually against the Federal Reserve ever being an establishment. And that's, like, there's just a lot of ties to this on how and why it was a hit job, because the Federal Reserve is the power, especially of the United States. It's not the government. The Federal Reserve is the power of the United States. They control the economy. They control if they're going to raise the interest rates. They control if they're going to lower the interest rate. They're going to control if they're going to loan America more money. They turn on the printing machines. They have so much power that goes way beyond the government. It's like the government's just like a puppet master, or just puppets to the puppet master of the Federal Reserve. And so you actually have to look at, like, what they have built and how out of control it's gotten, and why we are just pawns to this game of life. And I just feel like we need to talk about stuff like this, because people, we are entering a very crucial time in history, and I know that people are waking up, but the problem is that people don't know what the heck to do. They don't know how to stop it, and they don't know how to get out of it. But you need to start educating yourself. It's like, there's a reason why Donald Trump has said in an interview, smart people don't like me. And honestly, that's one of the best things that he has ever said in that presidency. And it was such a defining moment when he said that on national television, like, oh, smart people don't like me. I wonder why. It's because you have to understand is that you are not going to get the education in these schools because they are the ones who created this school. They control our curriculum. They control what we learn. And they are the ones who set all the rules to this game. And we were just pawns and program. And if you ask me, I'm angry about it. And this is why I wanted to talk about it.
You know, something I also didn't consider when it came to exploring capitalism and how it kind of interweaves into the way our government runs is, and I've seen this from multiple administrations, how they will often use the people as political leverage. Like,
absolutely.
Whether or not you can feed your family, whether or not you can afford to go to school, whether or not you can afford to pay for childcare, things like that, that they will use as political leverage to pass their agenda. And that is also something that has never sat well with me. I see it a lot from how they treat our veterans and how often the VA is sort of always in the middle of like this political push and pull because of, you know, it's interesting when it comes to our veterans because they're a very important part of our society and they sort of, they're representative of our strength as a country. And like, there's kind of like this component of pride that goes into seeing a veteran who has served the country and protected us. And, you know, there's a lot that goes on in that when it comes to the narrative we tell ourselves about our veterans and to see oftentimes the veterans being held as political leverage for this and that, like, it's just so, so disgusting. And, you know, I hate seeing that. And I hate seeing different aspects of our society being targeted or held for leverage so that they can pass their legislative agendas, regardless of what that is, whether that also includes controlling the monetary supply or the economy as well. And so, you know, I think we're at a time where we need to start getting very creative and thinking about what it will take for us to win at the game of life outside of the confines of what the government expects and wants of us and what politics is telling us what we should do and beyond what we've been reared and raised to believe. And that's very, very tricky. It is very, very tricky to do. But I think that Ali's right in that we do need to start looking at this because if this is end-stage capitalism, then we need to start adapting and thinking about what's next and what's for our future, because business as we know it isn't going to be the case anymore, especially if some of the things that the administration, again, I'm talking about in the West, the United States, is attempting to implement, which could have far and wide ranging implications across the entire globe. So I know other countries are looking at the US to see what they're gonna do and trying to plan ahead. And kudos to those countries because I think that that's necessary right now. And, you know, I've always kind of thought to myself that some of these countries are over here playing chess. Like they're watching and observing and they're not stupid. They're watching and coordinating and behind the scenes in a way that we're probably not even consciously aware of. And the US is over here just continuing business as usual, being the global bully and hoping that something different will emerge from it.
And they're also spreading lies.
And spreading lies and propaganda. Tons of propaganda, especially in the West, to the point that American people have no idea what's going on in their own country, but other people in other countries do. And it's such a bizarre thing because I didn't recognize the extent of that until I started traveling outside of the country. And I'm just like, you know, I didn't know that that was being perceived this way over here on this side of the world. Like, that's really interesting. Do Americans know that that's how they're being looked at? No, not at all. Oh, okay. So it's just really, really, it's so interesting. And to this day, like, there are people I know in the US who just have no idea about what's going on across the country. And what's potentially coming and the things that the administration is planning and wanting to do. Like, they sort of exist in their own world and bubble, just trying to get by every day, business as usual. And I'm just like, gosh, I really hope that you are able to see the bigger picture before it's too late. For some of them, I'm just not sure they will. So there's a lot of factors and challenges from that are going to be facing the American people, that are going to be facing us. And, you know, it's important that we continue to have this conversation, because I don't know what's in store. I really don't.
I have an idea of what's in store, and it's not going to be pretty. And I want to go back to what it's like in capitalism, because, you know, as a person, I'm a very hard worker. I have always been an outstanding performer, and I have never been recognized pretty much in any company for my contribution. And I have seen other hard workers, and the theory goes, I actually saw a woman, she was like ex-HR, and so, you know, human resources, and I believe she made this really profound post that hit me really hard. And she was like, unfortunately, these companies don't reward outstanding performers. They reward their friends, or they reward the people who perform less because they are the ones more likely to fall in line. They are more likely the ones that these companies can control and align with their vision. It's like, capitalism doesn't really reward the thinker who thinks outside of the box, who likes critical thinking, who wants to implement change. It's like, I'm just not understanding why so many outstanding performers get overlooked because they think differently and they do differently, but it works. But because the companies, unfortunately, a lot of companies see those people as threats. And so I just want to talk about like the suppression of capitalism and what they actually do to the people who want to actually excel. It's like the people who actually want to excel don't get rewarded. And that's also very demoralizing. And like, if you actually look at like what some of these companies value and what they reward, it's absolutely mind-blowing. And it's just like, at what point do the people who actually do excel at their work, when are they the ones that are actually looked at and recognized and rewarded for their hard work? And this is honestly why I've left so many companies, and this is another reason why I left the Matrix. I left corporate America like back in towards the end of 2015, so like almost 10 years ago, you know what I'm saying? And I cannot believe like how much my life changed once I made that conscious decision to walk away, because again, I was always overlooked. And like, I mean, Tiara and I shared a job together, and so she knows like my work ethic, she knows you know, how well I did at my job. And somehow I just never got promoted, and it drove me absolutely insane. And so when I saw this TikTok about this woman talking about how like outstanding performers actually get suppressed and overlooked, she was like, it's by design. And it made me sick inside.
You know, I've never worked in outside of the role that I worked with Ali and also a couple other banking roles. I've never really worked in corporate America. Like, I was always on the public sector side, so either nonprofit or government side. Interesting thing is that, you know, they will say to you, especially if you're an African American, that the safest roles for an African American are in government, that they don't do the same discrimination, that they're more open-minded, that they're more inclusive. And from my experience, that seems to be true. I've worked at several government entities, and in all of them, there was always plenty of African-Americans, plenty of diversity, plenty of color. So what's crazy about this is that a particular administration seems to think that there is a bias that goes on amongst government hiring, that they're intentionally overlooking Caucasians and Asians and so forth to the detriment of those individuals versus trying to bring up on board African Americans. And it has led to a lot of reinforced stereotypes against African Americans, not just in governments, but also in corporate America en masse, unfortunately. And to the point now where I see these stories of individuals of color being let go, being laid off, being overlooked now, like almost like reversing so much of the hard work that African Americans have done to be competitive in the workplace, like almost like that doesn't matter anymore. And it's very, very demoralizing and devastating. And, you know, I embraced a lot of those beliefs. And so I intentionally did avoid corporate America and corporate communication. I worked in the communication field, but intentionally avoided corporate because I knew some of these beliefs were not false, right? Like I knew there's some truth to that, that, you know, they don't particularly care for people of color in the corporate workplace. So you have that on top of these other aspects of overlooking the people who are the best performers. And, you know, I always consider myself to be a phenomenal performer. And I'm fortunate that at least in one of those roles, I was recognized for it. I mean, it was when I left. And one of the awards was actually what I had to apply for. But I got some type of recognition. And I was like, okay, well, at least they're acknowledging something about whatever I'm doing here. So there's just so many multiple confounding factors now that are making it hard for just the average individual to climb corporate America, to be seen, to be recognized. And if you're a minority right now in the United States and you're trying to climb that corporate ladder, my heart goes out to you. Things are different now. We have seen the disintegration of DEI. And I don't know when DEI turned into discrimination against white people. I don't know when that happens.
We know when that happened.
Well, right. Like, I mean, obviously, the current administration gave that power and gave it a voice. But I feel like even before then, that there was always this sentiment of, well, DEI is just a way for companies to discriminate against white people. And they want to fill their coffers with people of color to meet quotas. And I'm just like, you know, as an African American, we do care about merit. Like, sure, there are some of us out there who are like, hey, I'm going to go work this job because I know that they like black people. Sure, that exists. But for the most part, like, we want to be meritocratous. We want to be deemed capable, right? And I've always thought it was insulting to be a person of color and for them to be like, hey, we know you're this person of color. We're going to do affirmative action for you, give you a little bit of a leg up, you know, since we know what it's like to be black in America and we know you're probably not as competitive as these other people. So we're going to give you this leg up. And I've always thought that to be consulting. So I'm just like, I don't need a leg up. Like, I've worked hard to get here. I'm just as capable as Joe Schmo over there. I don't need that. But I know that that has been built into, you know, at least the education institutions for some time, not anymore, I don't think, but for a long time that was. And contrary to popular belief, many African Americans don't want to feel like they need a leg up. Like, they don't. So depending on what your perspective is, I know that many people feel differently. I completely understand that. It's just the lay of the land has changed. And if you are, again, in America and you're trying to pursue corporate America right now, just please take a step back and just kind of take a look at the lay of the land, because it's not like it used to be.
I feel like so many people are just burying their heads in the sand right now. And I understand why you want to do it, but unfortunately, you guys, it's absolutely the wrong move. 1000% the wrong move to just bury your heads in the sand and pretend that what's going on isn't going on, because if you don't start preparing for it, you're gonna be one of those people who just get wiped off the map. You know, it's, if we are looking at money right now, because I know money is a hot topic because so many people don't have it and more Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. I think I Googled it and it was like 70% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. They have absolutely no savings. And yeah. It's just like these people are just drowning in debt or drowning in their circumstances right now. And so many people are just like, well, throwing the towel, like I'm just going to become a squatter and not pay my bills. And, you know, whatever happens, happens. And I understand that very defeatist attitude. I understand it's not fair because the game of life is not fair, which is why we're having this conversation, because we have been set up. We have been lied to. We have been set up to fail, people. And I don't think that there is enough people talking about how and why we were set up to fail. And we have to go back and we have to look at history. You guys need to start educating yourselves. It's honestly, self-education is going to take you so far because, like I said, we don't control what we learn in school. You know, it's like in America, we were brainwashed thinking that we were the greatest country in the world, and we are not. And I can't tell you how many people I have met, especially after I started traveling. And when I would do visits home in the United States, I would just be like, well, we're the greatest country in the world. And I was just like, no, actually, we're not. And it took me leaving America and visiting six continents. I've been to six continents. Okay, minus Antarctica, I have been to them all. And I can tell you the way that people look at Americans is mind blowing. And I can't say that I disagree with a lot of their point of views. Mm-hmm. But I will say that we have to get out of this programming. And one of the ways to do that is by self-education. And I don't really know why people just want, like, I understand the want of wanting to bury your head in the sands, but we should not be burying our heads at all. Because again, there is no stopping this train. We are running out of time to stop this train. And it just, I understand the feeling of hopelessness, because it's like, there are countries taking a stand right now. Like Italy hasn't ran as an economy in like over a month because they are protesting against digital ID. And of course, America's not televising it. Well, why not? Because they don't want Americans to start doing the same thing, because they know that there is power in numbers. And I think people maybe have forgotten that. It's like, we hold so much of the power, because what would happen if we just stopped going to work? Their companies would collapse. And it's just like, we hold so much power, but they know that. So that's why they try to keep us powerless.
Yeah, I'm convinced they're actually terrified of us to some degree or extent. Otherwise, why would they be going to the extent that they are to keep us in the dark, to keep us suppressed, to keep us compliant? And, you know, you said that we need to learn our history. And the unfortunate thing is that you're right, that we as Americans, again, speaking strictly about the West, have not been properly educated of our history. And when you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. And I cannot tell you how many times I have sat and like thought back on the things I learned coming up as a child about history, and then learning the truth and just being like, this can't be right, right? Like, this is 100% not what I was taught coming up. Like, what do you mean that Pocahontas isn't the story I thought it was, that those Native Americans were actually ravaged and that Pocahontas was raped and chained and kept as a sex slave? What? Like, the extent of some of these things that we haven't been taught. And even when it goes back to like slavery, they even have sugarcoated and whitewashed slavery in the United States, particularly African-American slave, how Africans were slaves and enslaved. And, you know, we do know of some of the prominent African-Americans who did things to escape the bondage and the oppression, like Rosa Parks, for example, Harriet Tubman, and these individuals who kind of did something. But those weren't things that I was taught in elementary. Those were things I learned after I went to college. And so it's just, it's almost like a lot of that history, especially that history tied to empowerment, pushing back, fighting your strength, overcoming the oppression, gets suppressed or distorted and changed. And so many kids now know nothing of things like the Tea Party event where they went and they dumped no taxation without representation.
Yeah, the Boston Tea Party.
People know, kids today know nothing about that stuff. And I just cannot believe it. Obviously, it's by design. But when you don't know those things, when you don't know those things, you don't know that there was a prior generation of individuals who took their power and demonstrated and made a stance. All you feel is helplessness and hopelessness. And I see that with Gen Z right now, how they just feel so entirely demoralized and like there's no point. And I'm just like, man, like if these kids knew some of the powerful things that went on in their history and the things that people did to facilitate change, maybe they would be empowered and inspired to do the same, but they don't. And it's just, it's gut-wrenching. It's gut-wrenching.
Well, I mean, this is a whole other part of control, you guys. Like, this is a whole other part of control. It's like they have gotten rid of a lot of our history. They have
so
rewritten
much.
Our history. Well, they've also have rewritten our history in the process. And this is why it's like everything that we were taught is a lie. Everything that we were taught is a lie. And this is why I'm telling you, you need to be your own educator. I think part of the reason why I excelled so much is because I was such a curious kid. And I also had very interesting parents. And I can't tell you how many people have said that to me. Like, I'll talk about my childhood and they'll just be like, you have really interesting parents. And I didn't really realize that my parents were interesting. It's just kind of what I grew up with until I talk about it. I had a friend of mine here. He's Colombian. And he even said to me, he was just like, you have really interesting parents. And he was like, and that makes sense. Like, this is why I think I find you so interesting. It's because of your environment. And, you know, my parents always pushed me to self-educate. And there's a reason I didn't really understand it back then. There's so many things that my parents did that I did not understand back then, but I understand it now. And I'm understanding some very powerful lessons that they taught me, which is probably a really big reason, you guys, why I was able to escape corporate America, the Matrix, and why I have figured out the game of life. Because I do feel like in a lot of ways, I have figured out this game of life. And, you know, this is part of the reason why I became a life coach, because so many people, and it happened while I was traveling. Like, a life coach never really crossed my mind until I started traveling and I would kind of talk about my journey and leaving the Matrix. And they're just like, are you a mentor? Do you coach? And I was just like, no. And they were like, well, you should, because, you know, it's like, they say that the people that actually, like, when you become a role model, it's because you walk the walk. And that's, a lot of people were just like, you are the type of person that walks the walk. And this is why you should get into this space of like life coaching, because you are the example. There's just so many people out there that I would consider like imposters that would just just talk the talk, but they'd never walked the walk. And this is kind of what differentiates people, are the people who just talk the talk versus the people who walk the walk. It's like, you see someone in your life doing something, and if you're just like, I want to be that, I want to achieve that, it's like, those are the people that you want to look up to, because they did it. They did the process. And who better to guide you than a person who has actually done it themselves versus someone who is self-taught, self-studied, and is very knowledgeable and can advise, but they haven't actually gone through those steps themselves.
You know, funny thing, I feel like I am still figuring out the game of life. I do this thing where I haven't fully let go of that traditional components of the game of life and like
not at all
of like the job and the 9 to 5, because I haven't seen anything else work, right? Like, just me personally, I haven't seen anything else work outside of the 9 to 5. You go, you do your work, you get your paycheck, you go home, right? So there's a part of me that like still thinks that that's significant and that that's how you do it. Now, I obviously know, like, consciously and mentally that that's not true, that there are plenty of people who can achieve and succeed outside of the matrix doing their own thing or running their own businesses. It's just, it's never really panned out for me. And so part of my mind is like, well, that's just because you need to go back to what you know, you know? So it's a tricky thing to navigate, trying to get out of the matrix and into a different way of being and living, because if you're still carrying those beliefs and the programming, and if you've got trauma and all this other stuff there, it's not going to matter. Like, you're going to leave and then you're going to struggle, right? So there's more to it than just, oh my gosh, getting out of the matrix. Like, you've got to work through a lot of blocks and things. And even if you go into some of these coaching programs for small businesses or like starting businesses, some of the coaching programs I've done in the past, they will say to you, you're not going to get anywhere as an entrepreneur if you have money blocks, if you have belief blocks or limitations. And often they will make that part of the curriculum. Now, the unfortunate thing for me is that many of those just didn't really work for me. I don't know if it's just the individual didn't know what they were doing or if they were imposters. There are so many imposters out there. Like, it's really hard to find someone who knows what they're doing. But they do often make that part of the program. The process is, you got to look at some of these blocks, limitations, and programming if you want something different. And I want to put that out there because that's so, so important for individuals who do want a different way of being and existing and do want to escape the matrix and go about it on their own. Just make sure that part of that work and that effort involves like looking through some of the blocks or the limitations you might be carrying. Otherwise, you're going to have a bad time. That's just my perspective on it. And I just say that because, you know, I'm still working through a lot of those blocks. So I wanted to share that as well.
This is why this is going to be a two-parter, because I do want to talk about some of the ways that you can escape the matrix. And I honestly believe a lot of people's belief is, well, you got to have money, and because money makes the world go round and money is everything. And money is important. And I'm not going to say it's not, because I know it is. But money is not everything. And I just feel like the money block is the biggest block for practically everyone. It doesn't matter if you're from the West, it's a worldly thing. Like, money is just, money makes the world go round. And I wish that really wasn't the case, because, I mean, before there was banks and before there were buildings and houses, people lived off the land. People lived in tribes. People lived in community. People, you know, it's like everyone had their role. It's like you had the hunters and you had the gatherers and you had your healers and you had your elders. And, you know, you would teach, you know, it's like before there was hospitals, you know, there was plant medicine and there's all this spiritual medicine. And, you know, it's like before there was pharmaceuticals, you know, I'm just saying, it's like society ran and existed long before there was running water, electricity, buildings, offices, corporate America. And like, you guys do not understand, that is the knowledge that we have lost. We have lost so much of that knowledge. And it's like, so these tycoons came in and was like, we're going to build a new world and it's going to be based on capitalism. And, you know, we need working slaves. We need a modern day slaves. We need modern day slaves to come and run our factories and make us even more rich. And we're going to give them pitiful wages and we're going to sell this American dream and building up the corp and climbing up the corporate ladder and climbing up the social ladder. And it's going to work. And it did work. And they got exactly what they wanted out of us. And now what do you have left? You have a bunch of manic, panicked, anxiety-ridden, stressed-out people saying, we don't know how else to live because we don't know anything outside of this. And they have us exactly where they want us, because now they have their billions and trillions of dollars, while the rest of the people who basically broke their backs to help these people generate the wealth that they have, they are going to leave us in the dust. Do you think any of them are losing any sleep that we're starving and that we don't know how to feed our families? No, none of them are. I mean, the day that Trump basically was like, we're not funding SNAP benefits, was the day that he had a great Gatsby party for him and all of his wealthy friends, basically celebrating that people are going to suffer and it doesn't matter because here we are with all of our wealth. And it's just, it's the imbalance, you guys. And it's just like, this is the type of stuff that can't be ignored because the people have the power.
We do have the power. And I wish we knew that to the same extent that it's been recognized by some of us. I do see little things. Like, I know that there are people protesting, and I know that there are people who want change. And I've seen a small movement of individuals calling for something called democratic socialism. Now, the whole ostracization of socialism in the West is a really interesting thing. I don't know why it's been so heavily pushed back against by our governments. But there is a movement of individuals who support it because it's more in line with what you see with some of the Scandinavian countries like Switzerland, Denmark, that there is capitalism, but it's balanced with socialism, so that everyone sort of puts in and gives, and then everyone benefits. So it's not the same extreme that you see in the US where it's like so many winners and just, so few winners and so many losers. Like, it's sort of meant to balance out. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. I've also seen this movement of economic blackout, which I think is fantastic. I think it's a starting place. I do personally think it needs to go beyond that. So, Ali mentioned earlier, people not showing up to work. I think that a lot of people have their sentiments around that, because now you're talking about people not getting paid and not being able to feed their families. And I think that people struggle with that idea. But the whole blackout concept that's going on when it comes to the holidays about people boycotting Thanksgiving and Christmas, I think that's a fantastic idea. I think it's a starting place. And, I think it's great that we hit them where it hurts, which is for most of these entities in power and the wallets. So I do see little inroads. I wish that we saw more of that. And I wish that we saw more pushback and more efforts. And I would like to see a big movement towards bringing back unions. I would like to see a push towards more affordable healthcare, even if that means something like HMOs, emphasizing HMOs. Why don't we do that? Why don't we emphasize more the HMO concept? It's health maintenance organizations. So what you do is you pay a membership, you're part of an organization that others are a part of, and one pulls costs. Why isn't there more of that? I feel like their solutions are out there and we just either don't pay attention to it, or we don't grasp it, or we don't see it, or we don't care.
The power also took it away from us. So you have to understand, it's like they've been killing unions for the past 30, 40 years. And that's all by design.
It is all by design, but we can still make a stance and we can still make those demands. And, I've seen the 5501 movements, which I think is a fantastic movement. But what I haven't seen is, what are the demands? And to this day, I still don't know. Even when we did Occupy Wall Street back in the mid-2000s, which was, again, a really great concept, there were no demands. And so nothing shifted. And I'm just like, how do we do these things and then just not follow through? Are we just, I don't really know what's going on. I don't know. But I think the potential is there. And I think that we can all facilitate greater and grander change if we really saw the importance in it and really wanted to make that effort. I think we can.
Well, I mean, that's why I was saying, so what if we just stopped playing the game? What would happen?
I think you're right. I think it would collapse. But I don't know that people are ready to like do that to themselves, because when everything collapses, then that little piece of like wealth and comfort that they have also collapses. And people struggle with that. They struggle with that really hard.
But their wealth, yeah, but their wealth and comfort is already in jeopardy.
That's true. That's true. And, you know, you also said something interesting about how in the past we existed fine without corporate America. And
absolutely.
I would personally love for us to go back to a barter society, a barter economy where it's trade based. I think that's freaking fantastic. Like, hey, I want some of those candles. Let me give you this quilt I made. That's amazing. Like, I just think that's the most fantastic thing ever. We don't need a medium of exchange. Let's just exchange what we have to give. I think that's wonderful. And I would love to see us shift back into that. Who knows if that'll happen? I don't know. But like, yeah, we existed just fine before all of this stuff. We don't need it. We just think we do.
No, consumerism. That's part of the programming. Consumerism. Oh my God. Oh my God. I don't know who has been paying attention to this on TikTok, but Starbucks and their stupid little bear cup.
Oh God, don't get me started like, on those freaking bear cups. Oh my God.
Yeah, but no. But if you look at the trend of those bear cups, right? It's like Starbucks is somewhat genius. They were just like, how do we get, like, it's no secret. People don't have money to spend $10 on lattes. So they obviously have been losing a lot of business. And they were like, how do we get our customers back? So they actually came up with this ingenious idea of, we're going to release some special cup and it's going to be in the shape of a bear. And like, what's absolutely crazy about this is that the hype of this bear spread like wildfire, that people were waking up at 3:00 in the morning to line up outside of a Starbucks for a cup. And so it's like, you have to understand that consumerism, that just tells me the level in which consumerism is still very much alive. And you have to understand our needs and wants for material items and consumerism is what's fueling these companies. It's like, it's just, if you look at the relationship between, okay, how do we get our customers back versus, you know, fulfilling a need for all of these consumers, it's just like, it actually kind of blew my mind, the fact that people were lining up for these cups. And Starbucks did some shady stuff and they only gave each branch like 2 cups, and then the employees actually took the cups so they could sell on eBay. So all these people who got up at 3:00 in the morning and lined up in front of the stores didn't even get a cup.
Oh my gosh. And the employees have been sharing some of their stories on TikTok that I've seen about the stupid cup. And so many of them are just so frustrated and angry about it. And I saw one woman who was like, her boss had told her to go get some extra cups and bring them into the store or something. I don't know if it was like in a storage facility or somewhere. So she goes out to get them and she's walking in and everyone's glaring at her like she just stole $1 million. I don't know. It was just, and she talks about how she was looked at and how she didn't feel like, was 100% honest when she said, yeah, I don't feel safe. Like, my safety is threatened because of how people are acting over these cups. Yeah. And I just, yeah, consumerism is a thing and they have wielded it well to keep us distracted. And, you know, as long as we let things like Starbucks glass gummy cups distract us from what our government is trying to do to us, we're going to have a bad time. We're going to have a bad time.
That just was a really eye-opening experience, like where people's kind of, like the things that people prioritize and the things that they want to care about. It was a very eye-opening experience, I think, for even the workers at Starbucks and the consumers and everyone who hit social media to talk about this cup. I was just like, okay, that kind of, it speaks volumes on where we're at as a society.
And I saw those cups, like, they're not even that, I mean, they're okay. They're not even that cute and they don't even fit in your cup holder. Like, what are you going to do with it? I don't know what you're going to do with this thing. I've seen some people take like the plastic honey bare bottle and turn it into a cup. I'm like, that looks fine. That looks great. I don't understand. I don't. People are weird. It reminds me of back in like 1995 when Tickle Me Elmo, I think it was like the Tickle Me Elmo craze, and like how people
and
were like
Beanie Baby
murdering each other over these freaking items. And I'm just like, people. Oh,
yeah. Beanie Babies was the worst. I was caught in that craze. I'm not going to lie. But yeah, I mean, parents would be fighting each other in the hall for these Beanie Babies.
And I'm just like, why is it that serious? It's not, nothing's that serious. Nothing.
Right. It's like, and the two biggest crazes that I saw were like the Labubus and Lafufus and the Bear Cups. And I'm just like, what?
Yeah. And I don't even understand the Labubu thing. Like, what even is that? Like, I've seen a couple videos about
it. It looks like a monster.
It looks
scary.
Does.
It actually creeps me out, you guys. Like,
I'm just like, it's not cute. Like... it's not cute at all. But hey, you know, that's your thing. That's your thing, I guess. I don't know.
We're not
people are starving because they don't have SNAP benefits, but you care about the Labubu. Okay.
Right. And again, like we're really not trying to bash consumerism, but consumerism is absolutely part of the problem. And it's just the level of power and control that they have over us and how easily manipulated we are. Like this whole Starbucks cup was a really big eye opener for me on like how easily we are to manipulate. And it was very telling about what people care about.
Yeah. So, whoo, we have a lot more to say about this topic. So yeah, definitely going to be a two-parter.
Yeah, we're going to go into part two in a new recording because I want to talk about some of the ways that we can escape this. And, you know, I want to talk about some ways that will maybe help you guys because we're not completely... We're teetering a fine line, but we're not completely there yet. We're getting close, though, but we're not there yet. And so, you know, it's just I wanted to talk about the game of life because, you know, we have a platform and, you know, as a person who was able to escape that, I feel like it's kind of time for me to start talking about it.
I'd like to add to that, and we will do this in the next episode, a little bit about the financial system and crypto and what's going on there, because there are some interesting things going on there, you guys, and it kind of plays a role. So tune in for part two.
Yes, and thank you, everyone, and I hope you all have a fantastic week.
All right, thanks, you guys.